Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, May 26, 2013. This is episode 982. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Well, hey, good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to help you with technology, or help me help you, or help you help me. Or, you know, we're all in this together. I think of it as a giant user group of the airwaves. If it's computers that are getting you down, the internet, smartphones, dumb phones, microwave ovens, car electronics, home theater, digital photography, anything with a chip in it, we will talk. We will talk. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. Heather Hammon. Wow, you're glittery today. Look at you. She's wearing a very a glittery top. Are we celebrating anything today?
You know, I just don't have a lot of red, white, and blue for Memorial Day. And
it is Memorial Day.
I'm gonna wear the tunic.
So there you go. There you go. I was talking to a veteran yesterday, 3 months out of Army Special Forces in Afghanistan, two tours in Afghanistan, and I said, thank you for your service, and thank goodness you made it back in one piece, because so many don't. But yeah, we should remember this Memorial Day. We should also remember our good friend Gene Burns, who passed away yesterday of KGO Radio in San Francisco, and a long time. Did you work with Gene?
Radio great. Oh, Radio poor great. Gene. Yeah. My desk was next to him for years.
You worked next to him.
Yeah.
Side by side. Oh, there's a great picture you posted on Facebook of Gene and the crew, including you. And, yeah, so a little tip of the hat to one of the radio legends.
Yeah,
really was a great guy.
Great party thrower.
Yeah, well, he knew food and wine. And, you know, one of the things he did later in his career is really focus on the food and the wine and the traveling around, and that was great.
Oh, my gosh.
Boy, I love that.
He would have a Christmas party, and, you know, people that make caviar would be there dispensing it. I mean, it was absurd.
You mean the sturgeons came in person?
Yes.
Yes,
and you
okay.
And squeezed them into your mouth.
No? Like a sturgeon squeezed for the very first time. So we're going to open the lines. I see you've already done that. It's 888-ASK-LEO, 877-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. You'll be speaking to Heather. And get your call ready, because we're about to take them in a few minutes. I like to start off the show with a little sermon, especially on Sundays. A little technology sermon, sermonette. And it's always a lot of fun, because it gives me a chance to kind of think about what happened in the week and what it all means to real users, you know. I think the couple of big things happened this week. One, Microsoft announced its new Xbox One. A gaming device, and so we're going to see this Christmas time. We're going to see the kids are, and you know, I don't think it's just the kids; it's the middle aged guys too, isn't it? Are going to be saying, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, what'll we get? And it's really interesting to see how Microsoft positioned its Xbox One. They started off; they didn't even talk about games. Now, admittedly, the big gaming show is coming up in a few weeks. The E3 convention is in June. So maybe they saved more of the gaming news for that. But I think it also tells you something about what they plan to do with this new Xbox One. They want it to be a device you watch your TV with. In fact, it has what we call a pass-through. So a lot of times the old Xbox, the PlayStation 3, and I guess the PlayStation 4, they have those HDMI connectors. You plug it into your TV, but you know, so is your cable box or your satellite box, so is your Blu-ray or DVD player. So pretty soon you got four or five HDMI inputs. You got to get an AV receiver or a switcher to manage them all. Google did this. Microsoft was the first to do it, I think, back with Web TV. That you put the HDMI into the back of the Xbox One, And then it comes out at the other end and goes to your TV. So you're always kind of watching your TV through the Xbox One. And that gives it some interesting capabilities, which I think people might like. For instance, they showed watching an NFL game. And in a little snapped pane on the right, stats and information flowing through. Or you could imagine perhaps a Twitter feed as you watch the Oscars. You see what your friends are saying. I could think of a lot of uses for that. It also means that you don't have to have an extra input for your Xbox One. It's just coming right through it. And it also makes one wonder, maybe they'll do a DVR. They're putting a 500 gig hard drive in there. They didn't say anything about a video recorder on there. And in fact, as my friend Nilay Patel at The Verge pointed out, this has traditionally been a kind of not a very good solution because so many, you still need the satellite box, right, or the cable box to tune the stations. And so many of them need, it cannot be controlled via this two-way HDMI. So you've got your cable box plugged into your Xbox One, plugged into your TV. You still have to have some way of changing the channels on the cable box. The Xbox One can't do that unless you have an infrared blaster on some of these things. It gets to be a very complicated setup, too complicated probably for mere mortals. We shall see. We shall see. Let's figure that out. I still think it's going to be a good device. I like the idea of being able to kind of have a second screen with my TV. Microsoft calls it smart glass, and the idea would be you'd have your tablet. What do you bet it's not an iPad? I guess it's going to have to be a Windows tablet. You have your tablet in your lap, and while you're watching Game of Thrones, which is the most complicated show in history, think of it as Dallas in fur with swords, and you have to, who's that? Is she married? Who's she's the second cousin of the Earl's niece? What? But if you had the second screen, you'd have the family tree. You could say, who's that? Which I do all the time. And if you don't want to annoy your partner, wait a minute. I guess that's what happens when you get old. What is she doing on screen? Who is that? Maybe the second smart glass will take the place of your spouse telling you what's going on. Optical out, yeah, so that means you could feed your speakers from it. It's going to be an interesting hybrid, I guess, more than just a gaming platform. A lot of video in there. But what I also like is that Kinect now is part of it. That's that camera that you could buy as an add-on for the last Xbox that would see your movements. This one's much smarter. It's a high-def camera. You can use it for Skype, too. That's interesting, isn't it? Microsoft owns Skype, so it means you could be sitting watching TV and Mom could call and interrupt the show. Or maybe you snap Mom into a pane and say, hi, Mom. How you doing? Yeah. What the? Who's that? On? That would be interesting. The Kinect means that they have very high-resolution image of you as you move around, so you can play games by moving around. But it also, you can talk to it. In fact, a funny thing happened during the Xbox keynote where they were talking about this thing. Some people were watching it on their Xbox 360, which also has the Kinect in some cases. And every time they gave a command in the keynote, it would make their Kinect at home do something. They're watching the stream, and all of a sudden the TV turns off. Or and people were complaining on Twitter about that. But hey, at least it works. I like the idea of talking to the TV. I especially like the idea, and if they can do this, man, I'm in, of you saying, hey, I want to watch CSI Las Vegas. And it knows what channel it's on. It knows what to turn on. It does the whole thing for you. It just goes there. Instead of saying channel 5 or let's see the guide. And it does have a program guide built in. It'll be interesting to see what they can do with the Xbox One. No idea what the cost will be. We do know it'll be available this year. That means in time for the holidays. And my best guess is about $500. But I'm curious, how much would you be willing to pay? It's going to have a Blu-ray player in it. Comes with the Kinect. Lots of good games. Some exclusives. Jay Spin in our chat room saying $299.99. I don't know. Hey, if you want to join us in the chat room, you could do that. We've got a website that goes with the show, techguylabs.com. That's where you'll find the phone number, the website, a link to the chat. So you can join us. There's usually around 1,000 people in there having fun talking back to me. And I use the chat. It's very handy. You're kind of my second brain. So that's why I say it's kind of a user group of the airwaves, because we've got a bunch of people who can help answer the questions. I think it's going to be $500. That's what I think. The chat room says, we'll pay $300. That's it. That's all we'll pay. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Let's talk high tech. What do you say? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Memorial Day. Our show today brought to you by my good friends at Ring Central. This would be a good time to tell you about our phone system here in the Brick House Studios. When we set up a business and actually build a studio, and suddenly we got employees, like 25 people working hard all the time, constantly working on important things. I couldn't make them. I couldn't say, hey, you guys, you got to use your cell phone. That's what I used to do. You got to use, you're making calls, even for the business, you got to use your cell phone. No, I had to get a phone system. Fortunately, we have a great IT guy, Russell. And I said to him, Russell, what do you suggest? Do I go to the phone company, get a PBX and all? He said, no. You want you would do everything else in the cloud. Why don't you get your phone system in the cloud with Ring Central? It's all in the cloud. There's no PBX. That means we can go to the web and manage this. No hardware to install or maintain. Just plug in the phones and it just works. We can customize a call handling. Heather will get her voicemail and her email, faxes right on the smartphone. In fact, you put what's great about Ring Central is you put this smartphone app on there, and when you're making calls for the business, you do it through the smartphone app. We pay the bill, and it shows up as the 800 number. That's true for business text, too. Now they've got Ring Central Conferencing. You get your own single conference bridge number, part of this whole solution, right? Business SMS. Conferencing up to 1,000 participants. You can mute participants, get caller count. It's all software, right? So it's very powerful. Record the conferences, save them for later. It's easy to use. It works right with your desk phone, or as I said, you've got your iPhone, your Android, or the Ring Central soft phone, which is all free, built in with your monthly service, which starts at as low as $20 per month per user, and that includes toll-free calling in the U.S. I mean, it really is a great deal. You get local or vanity numbers for voice and fax. You got business SMS. This is all included. Unlimited internet fax, unlimited extensions. They've got BlackBerry, Android, and iPhone apps. Auto receptionist. We have the dial by name directory, which is great. I think you're going to like it. I want you to try Ring Central right now. 30-day risk-free trial and a special offer just for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980, or go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT, or call 800-543-9980. You will love it. We do. Ring Central. It's the boss. Tribute to our men and women in service on this Memorial Day 2013. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Are you ready, Heather? You got somebody to start us off. A good call.
Yeah. Well. Ooh,
yeah.
So loud to myself.
Yeah. She says, "Hey, by the way, you get a view of Jeff building our Death Star. Does he take a break when I'm not looking at him and just like get busy?
I haven't seen him not working.
Yeah. He's been working for 3 days. Dig, you can hear it rattling.
Plastic.
He's going through the Lego pieces. How many pieces, Jeff? 3,800 pieces. It's a 350-page instruction kit.
I love how he didn't even need to look
it. Oh, he knows.
He just shouted it right out.
Oh, he knows.
He's like so cute into you. But yeah, let's see. Who was I thinking? Oh, I loved Dion in L.A. Another small business question.
Love those. Thank you. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Dion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks so much. I need your help.
Okay.
So I've got a small business, really small and relatively new. And as part of that, so now I have all these like different pieces, you know, of social media and online presence. And so now I'm trying to figure out how do I coordinate them all, make them effective.
Yeah.
So I'm not spending all my time doing that.
Not every business lends itself to social media. What is your business?
It's a company called Lantern Cycle Works, and I make custom bicycles.
Yes, that would lend itself perfectly well to social media.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've got a website, which is simple, but I'm happy with it. I mostly use it to post photos. I took your advice. I use Squarespace. I really like it. I've got a Google Plus account, which I got to tell you, I've never really made sense of, but I have it just because I use Google apps for email. And then I've got Flickr and LinkedIn.
Yeah,
and
you're doing pretty well. I mean, Flickr, the Flickr place to, stuff, the, you did the right thing starting with the website.
Okay.
You, and the reason is you need to have a place that you own.
Yep.
I've heard from people, you know, who are on Facebook and say, this is our presence on the internet. And Facebook's a perfectly good place to be, but Facebook controls it. And if Facebook decides to pull you down for whatever reason it happens, even by accident, then you don't have a place on the web. So always start with your own site.
Okay.
However minimalist, I love the idea of pictures, especially since you have a physical product people can see and probably want to see before they buy.
Mm-hmm.
You should, you know, the big social media spots, Flickr's now kind of, I think, a good place if you're doing a lot of pictures, but I certainly would do Google+.
Okay.
I certainly would do Twitter, and I would absolutely do Facebook. LinkedIn is more for you.
Yep.
LinkedIn is how you network with other business owners. You know, it's great for job hunters. I finally got rid of my LinkedIn account about a year ago because I realized I guess I'm not going to be looking for work again.
Hopefully.
I think I'm at the end of the line, so I don't need to network.
Let me ask you about Facebook. So I have a business page. I don't have a personal profile, partly because listening to you, and I know you've had some issues with Facebook as well as others.
Well, I have privacy issues, but if you're a business owner, if you think your customers might be on Facebook, then you know that's the rule.
Okay,
where are your customers? That's where you need to be.
Okay, because you know if you just have a business page, the functionality is really limited. You can't really do much with just a business page.
All you do is think of it as a place to post pictures. To post information about your business, good news, that kind of thing. We use it, and one of the good things that Facebook does for a page is if you go to facebook.com/twitnetwork, for instance, which is our business page, is the analytics that they give you, which tell you a lot about who's visiting. But you notice one of the big things is get more likes, pay $50. You know, they want you to promote page, give us money. It's for them, it's a way to advertise, right? But the analytics are useful, and you'll get an idea of whether your customers are on Facebook. They kind of need to be on Facebook. You need to be on Facebook if that's where they are, right?
Okay.
So the same thing with Twitter. Twitter's a little harder to use because what are you going to post on there? You only get 140 characters. But I think the key on all of this is it can't be posting advertising or marketing stuff. I mean, obviously it all is.
Right.
But you have to do it subtly in a way. So you have to give it value. So you might post on Twitter. You might post bicycle maintenance tips or whatever seems appropriate to your crowd. And I would suggest, and this is a lot of work, but, you know, I think the payoff is big. This can be your marketing budget instead of spending time or money on, you know, billboards or bus ads. Look what Mike's Bikes does, for instance. That's a good example of a national bicycle company that uses social media, I think, quite well.
Okay.
And because you're making them custom, I think that you really do want to reach out to customers. You want to post pictures of bikes we just made. Pinterest, believe it or not, might be a good site for you as well.
Yeah, that's really what I've been doing with my website, right? So I have a series of, you know, a photo tab, and I just update pictures.
What's the web address?
It's lanterncycleworks.com.
I'm just going to pull it up so I can see what you're doing. And you're right. It doesn't have to be too fancy. Yeah, this is fine. This is actually quite beautiful. Nice job.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I love these images. So there's beautiful sepia-toned images of the materials that you use, of you crafting a bike. I think it's a good idea.
And if you go to the tab where it says photos, then there's additional photos, and each one of those is an album built, you know, through Squarespace. And then there's all, you know, more pictures individually of the process.
Same thing with Flickr. Do the same thing with Flickr. I would probably, in this website, be a little clearer about what your business is. I mean, I like the story and all of this stuff, but you might want to tag, right? It says Lantern Cycle Works, hand-built in La Crescenta, California. You might put a bigger tagline underneath, which is almost your mission statement.
Okay.
You know, we build bicycles, unique bicycles for unique riders or whatever it is, you know. You know, custom bicycles for one-of-a-kind customers. You know, I would really, because I want to come here and I want to know immediately what you do.
Got it.
And it's beautiful, but it's not immediately clear. I also would then, because this is where people are going to go when they, you know, and the very important, which you don't do, is put your social participation right up front. So have a link to your Facebook, to your Twitter, to your Flickr, all of that right up top. So that, because how are you going to get people to follow you on those places? Well, it's going to start with your website.
Okay, so So that's got to show up right up top. So people
right up top.
Scroll down. Okay.
It really is valuable to look at what people, other people are doing in your business or related businesses, and find kind of the best practices. You know, the one that leaps to mind is Mike Spikes. I think they really have, you know, they're a big company with lots of marketing. But I think if you look at what they do on their website and their social media participation, you know, I like your page is a little cleaner and simpler. When I go to Mike Spikes, it's not as clean and simple. This is a Northern California bicycle. But right up top, you see Google+, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube is another one, Flickr. You might think about, and remember, it's all subtle marketing.
Right.
It's not, hey, come here and buy a bike. I've got a great deal. We're blowing it out to the bare walls. You'll get wheels. You'll get spokes. You'll get rims. You want to say, you know, hey, here's a great ride that I just took on this, and here's a bike built for this ride or something like that. You understand?
Perfect.
Content. Content, content, content. And you really want to focus on who you need to understand. Nobody understands better than you who your customers are and where they are and how you reach out to them and what they want.
Yep.
And that's really the key to modern marketing. And this is a world that has changed a lot. And I think a lot of companies are stretching a little bit to get into this. So this is a chance for you to do something different. You have a perfect business for it.
And I know, Lil, so Flickr just recently made some changes. I know they have all kinds of apps and functionality.
Hang on, because we got to take a break here, but we can talk a little bit more about Flickr. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, we're going to stop it right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. get you ya-yas on 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking about marketing and the modern way of marketing. And this call, I get a call like this a lot where I have a YouTube channel, I have a website, I have a business, and I don't know how to market it. Last show, in fact, we were talking a little bit about how in the old days, if you had a record label, they would help market you. If you have a book publisher, they would market you. Although I have to say, having written a total of 13 books. The days of the book publisher sending you out on a book tour and getting you in newspapers and all that, those days are long gone. If you're not Danielle Steele or John Grisham, it's not going to happen. So I think even if you get a record label, unless you're a top tier artist, you're going to have to be doing your own marketing. And if you're your own small business, that's for sure you're going to have to do your own marketing. Dion has a bike manufacturing business. He makes custom bikes, and we've been talking about that. Now, you said you're right. Flickr has changed a lot, but I don't think it changes the idea. And you might want to look for groups, bicycling groups and stuff like that, and join them. This is one of the keys. You know, I mentioned that you need to know your market.
Right.
And you need to know where they hang out. But the other thing you need to do is participate. So you can't expect them all to come to you. You have to go to them. And so it's all about building. Marketing today is all about building an engaged community around your product or service. And the way to start doing that is engaging in other people's. So find some Flickr groups where bicyclists, the kind that might be interested in your product, hang out and participate. Post your pictures to those groups. Like their pictures. Comment on their pictures. They'll get to know you. And that builds up a community. All of this is not an instant turnaround. You're not going to suddenly see a sudden spike in business. But in the long run, this is the key, I think, nowadays to building a success.
Sure. And maybe, you know, I mean, I was looking at Flickr and saying, wow, it has all these apps and all this functionality. But maybe that's the wrong focus. Like you said, maybe the focus is really just the community and the participation.
Exactly. You might make, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing to make a community on Flickr. But also participate in the community. And you can use Flickr to store your photos and then link to them in your site. That will drive people towards your Flickr site. Notice Mike's Bikes does have a Flickr site. So it's not a bad idea to do that. Flickr is, boy, is it. It's about images. And this is in response to both Facebook and Google Plus becoming more about images. Flickr was the original photo site. And they're saying, Yahoo's saying, oh, boy. Oh, boy. We got to do something to keep this alive.
Well, Leo, that's a great help. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Since the Tech TV day, so thanks so much.
Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. Yeah, of course, Flickr just announced they're buying another site that you might be interested in, Tumblr. In fact, in some ways, Tumblr supplanted Flickr for people who wanted to post images on the web, TUMBLR.com. Free to set up a Tumblr site. You probably should have one. I have one. Everybody should have. You know, all of these are free, except that it takes time. But if you're taking images, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, one image for each site or two images. You can save the same image on different sites. Get it out there. The more active, the more participatory you are, the more results you'll see from all of this. Nathan is in Fort Collins, Colorado. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Nathan.
Hi.
Hey.
So I have a question about me and my friends. We're in middle school, and we want to get a domain website and put HTML-embedded games into it. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, that's a great idea. So you want to do HTML5, I would guess, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so that means you're learning, you and your buds are learning, and boy, what a great idea to do this. JavaScript, CSS, those are the two main technologies. You might be learning some additional JavaScript frameworks like Query or Node.js, jQuery or Node.js. Those are very useful tools that will make you a valuable commodity in the workplace. So I highly encourage this. You can put this stuff almost anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I would say what you want is a site that will let you modify and post JavaScript onto it. So that's going to eliminate a lot of sites. You're certainly not going to do it on Facebook.
Yeah, I did a little kind of test thing on Google Sites. That kind of worked, except we were wondering, I know Get Your Business Online has a free way where you get...
No, don't do that.
Okay.
So what you probably want to do, if you're really going to do this right, is learn about stuff like GitHub so that you can work together. You're gonna learn all of this anyway, so I don't know if I need to tell you ahead of time. It might all be a little overwhelming. I would say, if Blogger doesn't do it, then look at WordPress.com.
Okay.
Both of those are free.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they will allow you to embed JavaScript.
Okay.
Let me ask the chat room if anybody's doing any HTML5 programming and where they're putting their content. You know, Google offers a great thing called Code Engine.
Okay.
And you should know about that. Paul Apps reminds me about Heroku, which is actually based on Ruby focused, I believe. I would say, know about code.google.com. Go look into that. That's a place you can store. They have an app called App Engine that you can store your apps, which can be HTML5-based apps.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And then you can go to WordPress.com and perhaps link over to that or embed that.
Okay.
They'll have the advantage of doing it that way is that you and your friends can work together. You know, you can if multiple people are working on a program, it's really nice to have what they call a versioning system so that if I make a change, I don't overwrite your change.
Yeah.
Right?
Like Google Docs, kind of?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Okay.
It's Google Docs for programming.
Yeah. So then I have another question.
By the way, you know, you just mentioned Google Docs. You could put HTML5 on Google Docs, too.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
Okay, so then, let's see. Is there a way where, is there some kind of site? Because I would hate to do the little... tags, every tag by itself to code the design of it. Is there a website where we can kind of like use tools, paintbrushes and stuff to design the website and it outputs an HTML code?
What a great idea. Sure, there are lots of ways to do that.
Okay.
Let me send you to a place called Code Academy.
Okay.
And take their JavaScript tutorials. They're free.
Okay.
And what you want is something that's a little bit more of a modern development technique, where instead of doing this line by line, you want to draw a circle. You write the calculus formula for a circle in your code.
Right.
You would like to draw a circle and have it generate the code. And
right.
I think this is not at all uncommon in most modern programmers. You do the UI first, and then you hook up the UI elements to your code.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure off the top of my head where the best place to do this to generate JavaScript or to generate an HTML5 would be. I bet you there are good places to do this. Certainly those frameworks I mentioned, like Node.js and jQuery, that's what they're designed to do. They're higher level primitives that let you do things like draw a circle without doing a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be doing a lot of learning. And I think this is really great. Start with somewhere like Code Academy and learn the basics of JavaScript.
Okay.
Have you studied any of this at all?
I've learned basic HTML.
HTML is easy.
Yeah.
But it's a good start. Next, you're going to learn cascading style sheets, or CSS.
Okay.
Okay, start working on that. And then you can start on the big boy, the programming language itself, which is JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, there are a lot of JavaScript frameworks that make this easier. I mentioned two, but there's also Coffee, which is very popular. And Flickr makes one available that is really great for, not so much for gaming maybe, but certainly good to know about. There's if you search for JavaScript frameworks on Wikipedia, you'll see a whole bunch of them. These are all designed to make it easier kind of to do what you want to do, just kind of like what you're saying. They give you higher-level tools to do things like draw circles or move a sprite across the screen.
Okay.
You got a lot to learn, but this is going to be fun for you. I think this is great.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. CSS-tricks.com. Boy, there's a lot of stuff. CoffeeCup.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Cindy is in Costa Mesa, our next caller. Hi, Cindy. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
My daughter was given a Verizon iPhone 4S.
Okay.
It's practically brand new, it's about a year and a half old.
Yeah.
And we have T-Mobile service. And I was told by an iPhone repair service that for $65, he can switch out the chip.
No, he
can't.
And
he said, oh, okay.
So, if it were iPhone 5, wait a minute. You're saying she got a Verizon iPhone 4S?
Yes. And it was given to her. Somebody lost it for a year and a half and then recently found it. So, it's about 2 weeks old in use, a year and a half in age. And it's brand new, but it's Verizon. And we have T-Mobile.
Yeah,
like I said, I was told that the chip could be switched out, but that I might have some problems with future updates.
So the issue is that T-Mobile is a GSM-based carrier. That's the technology they use, and Verizon is not. Verizon and Sprint use CDMA. The new iPhone 5 can be used on the T-Mobile network, the Verizon one. I'm trying to figure out if the iPhone 4S can or not.
And the system is the older system. I don't know a lot about these things, but it still has the 5.0 something. It has not been updated to the 6.0 something. I don't know if that means anything.
Yeah. No, it can be updated. I don't think this is a problem at all. The issue is that it has a SIM slot. I don't think he even needs to do anything. The issue is if it's locked or not. I think you could go to a T-Mobile store and put a T-Mobile SIM in it, and it would work, period.
Well, there is a problem with the unlocking. We did go to Verizon with the person that gave it to us, and Verizon was real cagey. They said, well, are you going to try to use this on another service? Because we're not going to unlock it if you do that.
Go to a T-Mobile company store. You're going to an independent third-party store, I can tell, which is fine.
No, it wasn't. This was a Verizon corporate store.
No, I know. Don't go to Verizon. You're done with Verizon.
Okay.
What you want to do is, see, T-Mobile is trying to get people with iPhones to move to T-Mobile.
Right.
So I think you go into the T-Mobile store, and they'll know. They'll say whether, here's the question, is whether it's locked or not. I know the iPhone 5 on Verizon is not locked. I don't know if the 4S on Verizon is locked or not. If it's not locked, locked means it's locked to a carrier. If it's not locked, then the guy is just taking your money for nothing, because all he has to do is put a T-Mobile SIM in it, and it's a T-Mobile phone, period.
Right. No, these are two different people. We went to an independent that said he could do the chip.
Yeah, don't talk to the Verizon store, period.
Okay.
You're done with them. They're not going to encourage you in any way. They don't want you to move.
Yeah, but they need to unlock the phone, and they won't.
No, they don't need to unlock the phone.
Okay.
So the guy, if it's locked, so Brandman said in our chat room says it is locked.
Yes.
See, that's the issue, is whether it's locked to Verizon as a carrier. And somebody else can unlock it. That's why it's charging you $60. I'm just looking real. The Verizon 4S doesn't work with T-Mobile. Even unlocked, it's been tested. This is from T-Mobile support. So okay. Verizon may have done something to prevent this. That means now you got to jailbreak it. And then that's why the guy wants $60. If he guarantees that it's going to work, then go ahead and do it.
No, he said he would guarantee it would work until the phone needs to be updated.
Right.
If there's updates, he said he can't guarantee that it's going to work.
He's right. Once you jailbreak a phone, you don't want to update it because it'll break the jailbreak.
So is there any downside to updating the phone?
Update it now.
Okay.
Is it still on a network? You might be able to update it via Wi-Fi. Try updating it now. Apple does the updates, you know, not Verizon.
Okay, I'll try to update it. That would bring it up to...
That would bring it to 6.1.
Correct.
And then have the guy jailbreak it and unlock it. And then you're at the most recent version. You will not want to jailbreak it again until such time as the jailbreaks are compatible with the up. You wouldn't want to update it again until such time as the jailbreaks are compatible with the new update. But usually that doesn't take it very long.
Then one last question about that. Not that security is a huge issue, but I had read some things on the internet that when it's jailbroken, there could be some issues with security, and I don't know security in what way they're even talking about.
So let me tell you, first of all, there is no jailbreak for the most recent version of iOS 6.13, so you are going to want to, if you can, wait till somebody, and it takes them a few days or weeks to jailbreak. 6.13 is so new that it hasn't been jailbroken yet.
Okay.
So this is so complicated, and I'm sorry that it is. What a jailbreak is on the iPhone is really pretty straightforward. It means you can put other people's software besides Apple Store software on there. That's all a jailbreak is on the iPhone. The risk is that you could then download software that has malware in it. It's not vetted by Apple. I don't think that's a major risk.
Okay. Well, especially when we're getting all of our stuff from the only software we would download is from iTunes or Apple App Store.
Right, right. The risk is if you said, oh, hey, here's a cool program on some other store and downloaded it. I don't think it's that risky.
Okay, and we won't do that.
Yeah.
So
I'm really the most straightforward thing would be to go back to that third party guy and say, yeah, go ahead. What version of iOS is it on right now?
Currently, it's on the 5.0 something because it hasn't been updated for a year and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still in the brand new condition from January 2012.
So you'll have to use an older iTunes. I'm not sure what I would recommend here. This is not ideal, but obviously, but you got it for free.
My other choice would be to sell it on eBay, which I have no idea how to do that, and buy a T-Mobile iPhone.
Here's what you do. You go to Gazelle, GAZELLE.com.
Okay.
And you don't have to sell it on eBay. They sell it on eBay. You don't make quite as much money as you would if you sold it yourself. But the upside is they just send you cash. And see what it's worth. If it's in brand new condition, an iPhone 4S is probably worth several hundred dollars, more enough to at least get the, you know, they don't call it subsidized on T-Mobile, but it is the subsidized. And then you'd get an iPhone 5, which would probably be better off.
Oh, great. A 9-year-old with an iPhone 5.
She's 9. This is a perfect phone for a 9-year-old. Let me think what the best. I mean, I completely understand what you want to do, and it's a little tricky because even T-Mobile says, "Oh, we don't know if this works."
Yeah, they're kind of cagey about it too. I mean, they're like open arms, and they do even have an iPhone specialist.
They want you on. T-Mobile just now got the right to sell iPhones, but for a long time, they were really encouraging people to move with their iPhone. It's just tough because it's a Verizon. If we're an AT&T iPhone, no problem.
Gotcha.
It's tough because it's a Verizon iPhone.
Okay.
So there's your choices. You could Gazelle it. By the way, Gazelle's a sponsor, I should mention. Okay. But it's what they do is they do it on eBay, and you probably get 20% less, but that's so what? It's a lot easier.
Should I tell them you sent me?
No, it doesn't matter. I don't need the money. That's fine. But just at least get a quote and see what it's worth. I think it'll be $180 to $210.
That's good.
Yeah, that might be worth it then to get a cheap iPhone. Others offer iPhones, but I think you want to stay with T-Mobile because you're already there.
we're already there, and I know they're only $20 a month when you put $100 down.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Right, exactly. And I really do think that it's, I know it's, it seems odd that for a 9-year-old to have a cell phone, but it's so much more convenient for you.
No, she's taught grandma how to text. Are you kidding me? This is great.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? She might be the next Bill Gates. You're giving her a computer. It's more than a phone. That's a computer.
And her girlfriends are also doing their own little gaming website.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah, they want to do their own game and everything.
I love that.
But we have a dad in the group who actually develops games. So.
Oh, she should really have a... You should jailbreak it and say, have at it. In fact, make her figure this out.
Oh, good idea.
$60 to unlock it. That's actually fairly reasonable. If he can promise you that it's going to work on T-Mobile, that's great.
He did promise on T-Mobile, but not through updates.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. Because once you jailbreak it, you cannot update it. You don't want to update it. It would break it.
Right.
Okay. And I don't think it's going to matter. It's on 5. That's fine.
Okay.
I think
all
that's
right.
Fine.
Well, I've got some options. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Isn't that great? I think that's great. She's going to be the next Bill Gates. I can tell already. She's 9 years old. That's awesome. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to take a break. Have more calls right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and this is the time of day when we gather together on the radio to talk about technology, computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, digital photography. I think our digital photography guru, Chris Marquardt, is back in town. If he is, we'll talk to him at 33 and a third after the hour. I know who is here. Heather Hammond is here. Hi, Heath. Does anybody ever call you Heath?
No.
Heath. H H
when I was little.
H bomb.
H bomb.
B A L M.
Yeah. Can't think of what else.
who do we have on the phone?
We've got Benjamin in LA.
Benjamin. Mrs. Robinson. Hi, Benjamin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
I had a quick question. I drive a truck over the road, right? And I watch most of my television and videos online.
Not while you're driving.
No, not while I'm driving. On my downtime.
you know that people are doing that now. They've got those screens, the big screens, and you know people are watching TV while they're driving. You know it.
Oh, yeah. They got the screen and, like, little CD player radio.
You probably see it from your truck. You look down on people. They think you don't know. They're watching...
You can see it in the windows.
Yeah, they're watching TV. Get out, pay attention. Yeah. So go ahead. So at the end of the day, you're doing long haul. So at the end of the day, you want to watch some TV. I don't blame you.
Right. So I have a mobile hotspot.
Yeah.
And the server, I guess they give you a certain amount of gigabytes per
right.
month.
Yeah, it depends on the carrier, but generally they either cut you off after a certain amount, or more likely they throttle you. They slow you down.
Exactly, and that's what's happening. So yep. I'm paying like about 100.
Ah!
About 100 and...
Who's your carrier? Who are you using?
T-Mobile.
So T-Mobile is interesting. T-Mobile supposedly has an unlimited plan.
And that's what I have.
Yeah, but guess what?
they
all do this. It's unlimited, yeah, but they throttle you after 5 or 10 gigabytes, depending on your plan.
I actually end up with about maybe 2 weeks of good service, and then for the rest of the month, I'm watching the wheels turn.
Stinks. That really stinks.
And I'm trying to figure out, is there a better way?
Supposedly, you know, this is the problem. It's so hard to read through the marketing BS. So they say unlimited, but they throttle you. Sprint says unlimited, too. I don't know if they throttle you. I asked T-Mobile. I went in there, and I got the $70 everything, all-you-can-eat plan. And
right.
I said, throttled? She said, no. I said, no. I mean, really, seriously, when do you throttle me? She says, we don't. I said, come on. And so I, you know, supposedly they used to and now they don't. I don't know. Which plan do you have?
I started off with just, I think it was like they had a $24 plan. And that one didn't work. I was like, nah, that's not enough. So then I upgraded. They have a middle plan.
Go into the Sprint store next time. Now, the problem with Sprint is, of course, T-Mobile's not notoriously great for coverage either. But you got to check and see where you're going if Sprint is there. They tend to be quite good on like I-80, you know, cross country, because Sprint used to be Southern Pacific Railroad. So they use the railroad right-of-ways for their cell towers initially. Now, of course, they've expanded beyond that. But the coverage tends to be quite good where there was a railroad. So actually, for truckers, I wouldn't be surprised if Sprint is good.
Well, the bad thing is, Leo, I have Sprint as my mobile phone carrier. And that's the reason why I went to T-Mobile.
So you already know about Sprint.
Yeah.
Supposedly, Sprint
is... I haven't tried the Sprint mobile.
Supposedly, Sprint... Well, it'll be the same. So if you're getting poor 4G or 3G service on your phone, it'll be the same on a mobile hotspot.
Right. So mobile is really the only way to go wireless.
No, yeah, it is. I mean, when you get to the truck stop, they often have Wi-Fi. But nowadays, every trucker is using the bandwidth, and they don't usually have enough bandwidth in the stop for everybody, and so it's just as bad as throttled.
Right.
You know, so this is a common, I talk to a lot of drivers who have the same exact problem. So supposedly Sprint does in fact have unlimited, no throttling at all. The problem with Sprint is coverage. And if you've already got a Sprint phone, you know whether you're going to get coverage or not. Now you may, next time you go out, look at your, look how it's what your data is like. You know, the other thing you can do is you can tell Sprint, I want to use my phone as a hotspot. You don't even have to get a MiFi or anything. You already got a Sprint account.
Right.
And say, hey, I want to use it as a hotspot.
Any problems with Sprint's coverage, it's just the data. I'm not really.
Well, it's kind of the same thing. You're right. You're still getting phone service, but the data is getting slow. It's because they don't have 4G, or the 4G is Clearwire. What's the phone you're using?
I have a HTC Evo 3D.
Okay, so that may not be supporting LTE, which is Sprint starting to roll out LTE. Sprint called 4G, their Clearwire called it 4G, but it really was terrible. And I think that Evo does not support the new LTE. So you may find, in fact, that a MiFi does better. If it's just make sure it supports LTE, and then you have to see what cities. And Sprint's rolling out LTE pretty rapidly in cities, but not everywhere yet. So that Evo isn't using the latest Sprint bandwidth technology. It's using the old one.
Yeah, I think it's about time for me to upgrade anyway.
So one thing you could do is talk to Sprint, say, I want a new phone, get one that supports LTE. All their new phones do.
Okay.
And then also say, and I want to use it as a hotspot. So you don't need a MiFi card anymore. Just the phone is the hotspot. And then just see how it is. You know, say, I want to try it for 30 days and then see how it is where you go.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll hold on to the T-Mobile and get that one, so two weeks, I'll make it 2 months.
That stinks. Hey, at least you get 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Is it pretty good for the first 2 weeks?
Oh, yeah, it's good. It's excellent. Yeah, and that's a T-Mobile, but like I said, after about 2 weeks, it just
you know what? They're telling me that the hotspot on the phone is not unlimited, so you may try it and see what it's like, and then you may still want to get a MiFi.
Okay, I'll get that a try. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Thanks for driving. Driving safe. Not watching TV while you drive. Can you imagine the kinds of things truck drivers see? They look out there, that big high cab, they're looking down. They must see all sorts of stuff. People think they can't see. He's watching TV. Time for Wapner. I'm an excellent driver. I got to watch my Wapner. So 4G... The technical definition, according to the International Telecommunications Union, for 4G is 100 megabits per second bandwidth, download bandwidth. No one does that in the United States. There is no real 4G in the United States. But the ITU said, well, if it's a big step up from what you used to have, you can call it 4G. It's just a marketing term. Fourth generation. So all the carriers now say they have 4G, but there's a big difference in coverage, quality, and what it really is. T-Mobile 4G is HSPA+. Now, the good thing about T-Mobile is, since it's the number four carrier and it's not widely used, in fact, T-Mobile might be the fastest, because it has not just to do with the technology that they use, but how many other people are using it. So if it's not real popular, I get great results with T-Mobile here in our little town of Petaluma because nobody's using it. AT&T is faster, much faster technology. The LTE is much faster. But I'm sharing the bandwidth with many more people, so I don't get as much effective. So you see, it's very complicated. It's very complicated. Sprint has LTE in some markets. Supposedly, they have it in this market. But unless I'm standing under the tower, I get terrible results. I actually gave my mom my Sprint phone because it just didn't work too well here in Petaluma. And it works great where she is in Rhode Island. And this is why it's tough if you're a driver, because you've got to really look at, well, where am I going to be driving and what's going to be good there? And it might be worth it. If that's your primary form of television, it might be worth getting two different carriers so that if one works in one area, the other one will work in another area. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, or a suggestion. You know, one of the things we really like and appreciate is if you want to add to the conversation. Oh, I'm a driver and I use Sprint. It works great here, here, and here. You can do that here or on our website. We got comments there at techguylabs.com. Always free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Doing a little jailbreaking on that iPhone. It's a little confusing because we talk about jailbreaking and rooting as if they're interchangeable. You root Androids, you jailbreak iPhones. They're not at all interchangeable. You don't need to jailbreak an Android phone. There's a little checkbox in the settings that says, let me buy or download applications from other sources, from third-party sources, and they give you a big warning. This could be dangerous, you know. We're not checking this stuff. Okay, fine. That's all jailbreaking really does on an iPhone. It lets you go to other sources to download apps. You don't have to buy stuff in Apple's App Store. That's what jailbreaking is. So, in effect, an Android phone is already jailbroken. Rooting an Android phone, and by the way, that's completely legal and in most cases, by most manufacturers, encouraged. Google kind of leaves this capability in. Rooting means getting a super user or administrator access, unlimited access to it. And that means you can do stuff that you wouldn't normally be able to do. It's dangerous to have root access on an operating system because you could, you know, you could type something that would remove everything. You could delete all the files. Nothing's protecting you. So most users probably shouldn't run as root. But if you know what you're doing, rooting a phone is great because, for instance, HTC on all of its phones has what they call an unlocked bootloader. So you go to the HTC dev site, you unlock it. That means you can then root it very easily and put things on the phone to modify it. Most Android phones are rootable. A few are not. And it's pretty easy to figure out a way to do it. So, and one of the things that you might want to do once you root an Android phone is change the firmware entirely. This is something you really can't do on an iPhone. On an Android phone, you could put a third-party firmware. You could make it more of a vanilla Google phone, for instance, using something like Cyanogen's mod. 8888-ASK-LEO. I carry both. Right now, I carry both a rooted HTC One, which I really quite like, for the camera and stuff, but I don't like because the battery life is so poor and I can't put an extra battery in it. So when I'm going to be traveling a little bit more, I also carry a Galaxy S4 because I can just pry the back off and put another battery in it. They both have their own separate charms. And I like both phones. Wouldn't hesitate to recommend either. We'll see. You know, we expect an iPhone soon. Very soon. And we'll see what Apple does to respond to these new Android phones, which are quite good. Apple's really got a challenge at this point. Matthew's next in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Matthew. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I had a question about the Xbox One. Ever since it came out, a lot of people have been talking about a lot of stuff, but I haven't seen a lot of specific talk about how it has multiple OSs.
Yeah. And three, in fact.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And there's I know you know this site, Anantech wrote about what they know about the Xbox One so far. And at the end of their article, they made it sound like the multiple OSs are something that Microsoft could eventually put into tablets and laptops once the tech side of...
They kind
of
do. So they understand why it has multiple OSs. Underneath the hood is Windows. It's a Windows kernel, which means it's not the full Windows 8. It's just the central core of Windows, the Windows services and so forth, the base operating system. That's at the lowest level. And, of course, it makes sense to use Windows because people know how to develop for it. The processor in there is a standard x86 Windows-style processor. So for developers, from the point of view of getting developers to write games, it's something they know already. It's how to write for Windows. The middle part, there's three operating systems. So the middle part is Hyper-V. This is something Microsoft's had for some time. It's the idea of Hyper-V is you can run multiple operating systems and switch context. It's not emulation. It's a way of switching context. And then the top layer is just the game interface. And you can't use, you really wouldn't want to use a Windows 8 style interface on a game machine. So they have an Xbox interface that is easier to use, designed for a big screen. To call it an operating system is probably a bit of a stretch. Really, it's just a different UI. It's the equivalent of Aqua on OS X. It's the user interface. Okay. But Anand is right, because what they're observing is that the reason Hyper-V exists initially was to allow multiple operating systems to run on a single Windows system. You already have the kernel and Hyper-V on all Windows 8 systems, I believe. So, okay. Yeah. So
do
it's
you think
not.
There's any other uses for like multiple OS on like a home computer or laptop? Like,
oh yeah, sure. In fact, you can do that right now. A lot of people do. You might run, for instance, when you bought Windows 7 Pro, it came with Windows XP, so that you could run your Windows XP stuff. A lot of Mac users run Windows on the Mac. I do, using an emulator.
Okay. Right, but do you think there's like to have a computer the way that the Xbox One worked, where it's not in like a virtual machine window, but it's like
this like is yeah. This is a lot of people do this, and this is why Hyper-V exists. It's done in servers very frequently, and it's built into the modern x86 processors. This very rapid context switching that allows you to be running one operating system, and then boom, in milliseconds, switch over to another operating system, probably nanoseconds.
Okay.
So this is not an uncommon or an unusual thing. In fact, it's exactly what you'd expect Microsoft to do. What people find interesting is that they're using, by the way, they never said the Windows 8 kernel, which tells you a little bit something about how people feel about Windows 8. They said the Windows kernel, but of course it's Windows 8. But they didn't say Windows 8. Boy, that tells you something. That's the lack of confidence Microsoft has in its own technology. They know people, if we said Windows 8, would say, oh, I'm not buying that. Xbox One with Windows 8, I'm not buying that, but it is. It's a stripped-down, very highly optimized version of Windows 8. Dave Cutler, the NT team, did it. On top of that, Hyper-V, which allows you to switch context, and that means you could, I presume, switch in a Windows 8 UI on top. I don't know why you'd want to do that. You'd probably want to run the Xbox UI. It's much more suitable for what we're doing here. This is going to be a powerful PC. With a gaming system on top of it.
Do you think that Windows 9 could come shipped with Xbox?
Oh, that's interesting. Now you're talking. Sure, why not? Why not be able to? In fact, you could do that with Windows 8. Switch if you've got Hyper-V. We'll see if Microsoft does that, but that might be an interesting idea. You know, the big competition for the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 is something called a Steam Box. Steam is a company that sells PC games online, very popular with gamers. If you're a PC gamer, you already have Steam installed. You probably buy many of your games through Steam. Valve is the company that runs this. And Valve has decided to make a PC, essentially, running the Steam, a special Steam interface on top of it, designed for big screens. That will be the third big gaming machine. It'll be a PC gaming machine for your living room. So it seems to me that Microsoft might go in the other direction too, right? Gamers are what drive technology for most of us. You know, you don't need the latest video card to run an Excel spreadsheet, but you do for gaming. You don't need the fastest processors or the most memory or the fastest storage for word processing, but you do for gaming. So in some ways, gaming is what drives the technology. I think it's very interesting to see what they've done with the Xbox One. And I think it'll be well worth buying. Certainly, I'll be in line. 8888-ASK, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK, Leo, that's the phone number. Art is in Santa Maria, our next caller. Hi, Art. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
Hey, I got a quick question for you here. It's an older phone, but it's brand spanking new. It's new to me anyway, and it hasn't been used. My kid used it for a couple of weeks, didn't like it, and got something else. So it's fairly new.
All right.
In any case, what it is, it's an old Motorola Phantom 4G on the Sprint network, or it was. It's not on any network now. And what I was thinking of doing was being able to use it using my Wi-Fi with, was it Google Voice or whatever.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I think you can, nowadays, as long as you've got Wi-Fi on one of these devices, you could put Skype, Google Voice. There's a lot of programs. Talkatone, Tango, Viber. There's a million of these programs that give you phone calls via the internet.
Yeah, what I try to do was I try to install Google Voice, but it has it wants to confirm my cell number.
Right. Voice is the wrong choice. This is why you don't want to use voice. Voice, people think voice is a VoIP solution. It's not. You want a VoIP, voice over the internet protocol solution. Google Voice uses your phone. So that's why it needs to confirm your cell number. It's not a VoIP solution. So download Skype. Download Skype. It's free.
Okay.
And then you can, if you go to Skype, now normally Skype is absolutely free for calling other computers, anything on the internet, other phones on the internet, via internet. It's cross-platform, so it doesn't matter, you know, what the other guy's using. But if you want to have it call phones, you have to pay a little more, and you can even get a Skype phone number. For, I think it's about $100 a year, you can have a Skype phone number that's a real number, that when people call that number, I have one, your phone rings, even though it's not a phone.
Right. So let me ask you a question. Now, my kid is using Google Voice, and he uses his iPod. How does he get around that?
He has associated his Google Voice number with a real phone number in some context. Could be his home phone number.
Okay. Oh, it could be a home phone?
Sure.
It doesn't be a cell number?
No. You need a real phone number associated with it.
Okay.
Google Voice is a funny hybrid because you can use it in some cases as a VoIP solution. But I think as they move it to Hangouts, which they're doing right now, they're going to require you to make a phone call. Normally what happens with the Google Voice, if you use a Google Voice on your cell phone, is it places a call to your cell phone. It's like an operator that attaches the two people and then places a call to your cell phone.
Right.
So that's why it wants a cell phone number.
Huh?
I think Skype's a better choice, frankly, yeah. And I think Google's going to change how Google Voice works with Hangouts, and I think they're going to require you have a phone number.
Right.
So just go with Skype.
One more question.
Yeah.
One more question if you have time. Now, I was going to route this thing. Right now it's got the 2.3.5.
Yeah, you want to go more. It's it's gingerbread, yeah.
Right. Now, what website can I go to learn more about this?
XDA Developers, xda-developers.com, is the rooting an Android phone site. And then you'll search for the Photon, and it'll tell you what to do to root it. It will be, I think, fairly easy to root it. And then you're going to download from the Play Store, you'll download a program called Clockwork Mod, which is a great program. And there's a free version and there's a paid version. I paid for it. It's a few bucks, and it's worth it to support them. What Clockwork Mod does, the first thing you'll do is you'll install it so that when you reboot the phone, you can get into the guts of the phone. And then the next thing you'll do is you'll back up the existing 2.3.5 firmware. You always want to back that up just in case so you can go back, right? And then you could choose from – then you go download – you'll look in the section that says download mods, and you'll see a whole bunch of different firmwares you can download for that phone, including probably the one you want, which is Cyanogen Mod. That'll get you up to 4.2.2.
Cyanogen Mod. Okay.
Yeah. And that gives you basically a pure Google experience.
Right, that's what I'm looking to get.
Yeah, so you root it first so that you can then reflash the firmware with your... It's actually not reflashing the firmware, but it feels like it. You could put a new operating system on the phone, and then you're going to be able to get up to the latest version of the Google operating system. One thing to keep in mind, there'll be a checkbox that says, do you want to download the Google apps? Say yes. Because Cyanogen Mod cannot distribute itself with the Google apps. That's separate. So you need to download those in addition to Cyanogen Mod. You'll see. It's all pretty straightforward. XDA Developers will explain it all for you.
Good deal.
Yeah. It's called, you're right. The chat room says this Clockwork Mod makes it, but it's called ROM Manager. That's what it is, ROM Manager.
ROM Manager.
Yeah, by Clockwork Mod.
Good deal.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. Have fun with your new phone. This is the thing to do. You know, take over the hardware and make it your own. Now, the Sue's saying that rooting will disable Bluetooth's stereo, A2DP. That's not my experience. It just depends on the phone. Maybe on that phone it will. You should read carefully on XDA developers. It's not unusual for a new mod or a new firmware to have some missing features. But in most cases, my experience has been it improves the phone in almost every case. Richard in Bell Shores, you also want to take control of your Android phone, right?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Which one do you have?
What I actually have is a Sprint variant. It is the Galaxy S3.
Excellent phone. That's probably the phone to have.
I just upgraded from the S2 and love it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not my first rodeo as far as rooting the phones. It's just I can't find a root method for this phone because it is on a Sprint MVNO.
XDA developers, if such a thing exists, they'll have it.
And I'm a member of XDA, and, you know, there's some forum posts about it, but nobody has...
Yeah, sometimes that happens. Maybe Sprint must have locked the bootloader in such a way that nobody's hacked it yet.
Yeah, that was the way it was with my S2 that was also on the same MVNO.
Yeah, this can happen.
And,
this can happen.
And I ended up getting Cyanogen mod on it, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, I really like these Cyanogen mods because they're basically pure Google, and they get you up to, in many cases, and this is the unfortunate thing about carriers these days and manufacturers, is that they frequently don't update the phones. The Photon's a good example. It's still back on a very old variant of Android, you know, two major revisions ago. So often you have to do it yourself, but you can. And the S3 is very well supported in terms of rooting, and I'm surprised that they haven't figured out a way to root this one. Wiki.cyanogenmod.org has lots of good information, too, says Dr. Modem in our chat room. Really good. Really good. My strong recommendation is on an older phone like that. Now, the Galaxy S3 is a great phone by itself, but it's nice if you can get up to date and kind of get control of it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Going to Alex in New York. Hi, Alex. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I have a Galaxy S4, actually, that I just got. But the thing is, I really hate these hardware keys. And I was wondering if there's a way to use TouchWiz with the Google's the stock soft keys that they put in, because I'm kind of wondering why these manufacturers are still using...
Yeah, Samsung continues to have... Google has said, don't put buttons on the phone. We'll do it. And Samsung says, no, our consumers want buttons. And that's kind of the way it is, I'm afraid. I actually like it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask... Leo, that's a phone number. The chat room has given me a link to an XDA developers page. It says you can root all Sprint Galaxy S3s. So I'm pretty sure you can. XDA developers, we'll put that link in the show notes if people want to do that. George in Santa Monica, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, George.
Yeah, happy Memorial Day to you, Leo.
Same to you. Thank you.
And first, I'd like to thank all the veterans in the past years who made the ultimate sacrifice for us so we could be sitting here talking on the radio.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
My question is about LastPass.
Great.
If I get LastPass and put it on, and they ask for that master password that I have to remember,
yeah,
and say, like, in the future, and I have to reformat my hard drive, and that'd be wiped out, not when I go back into LastPass.
No. That's the beauty of it. LastPass is not reliant on what's on your hard drive. It stores your encrypted password file on its servers as well as on your hard drive.
Oh, good. So it'll be like...
You never without it. And what I do is I put LastPass on everything. All my phones, and as you probably gathered, I have a few. Yes. All my tablets, all my computers. It's on everything. Even my Chromebook, it's on everything. And I do... The one password that you have to remember is that one, and make sure it's good, random, and long, but...
Right.
I do remember that, and I don't write it down anywhere. And then everything else, Yeah, he's in LastPass.
I watched that show with Steve Gibson, and he talked about it.
Yeah, it's great.
He loves it, so...
You can lose your computer. I could lose everything, get a new computer. In fact, this is what I do. When I get a new computer, I install LastPass. I enter in my password, and all my passwords are there, everything I need. In fact, I keep stored in there other stuff besides passwords. For instance, my passports, my driver's license, social security numbers, any kind of stuff you want to keep secure and private, but you want to have access to it, LastPass is great.
Okay, I'm going to put it on today.
Yep, highly recommend it. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's a password locker. Now, there are a couple of other companies that do these kinds of things. 1Password is a very good 1Password. Yeah, I think that's what it's called. RoboForm. And I've tried them all, but I ended up on LastPass. KeePass is free and open source. But LastPass has all the features I want. It's free. There's a premium version for $1 a month, which I pay for just to keep them in business. I just love them so much. They're just fantastic. Highly recommend it. This way, you only have to remember 1Password, and everything else is in there. And you use LastPass to generate long, complicated, and highly unmemorable passwords for everything else. You don't have to remember them. LastPass will do it for you on your smartphone and everything. And then, so the key is this 1Password that you have to remember. And, you know, my suggestion is use a mnemonic. You know, here's an example. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, the opening sentence of Tale of Two Cities. Take the first letter of each, capitalize, you know, the first word, put a punctuation in there, period, maybe end with an exclamation mark. That's pretty good. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. That's 12 letters right there. And then maybe add the zip code of when you were a kid or your childhood phone number. You're padding it with more stuff. Now, this is something you can remember, right? Oh, yeah, it's a Tale of Two Cities plus my zip code from when I was 12. But those two together are not going to make... They're going to make such a long... That's a, what is it? That is a 18-character password that looks completely random. You can recreate it because of the mnemonic, but it looks completely random. If you do that, now you're pretty secure. You're pretty good. The other thing you might want to turn on is two-factor authentication for LastPass. LastPass will do this as well. It'll give you a QR code, and then you can download a program like Google Authenticator on your smartphone. Take a picture of that QR code, and Google Authenticator will give you a 6-digit additional code that you need in addition to the password the first time you use LastPass on any new device. So if a bad guy says, hey, I think I know Leo's password. It's the Tale of Two Cities plus his zip code. And he installs LastPass on his hacker machine, and maybe even got the password right. It'll then say, okay, and now what's the 6-digit authenticator? And he'll go, what? Dude! And unless he's got my smartphone, he's out of luck. See, isn't that nice? Look, nothing is perfectly secure. This is about as secure as I can imagine. LastPass.com, it's free. There is a premium version for $1 a month. It runs on everything, Windows, Mac, Linux, every smartphone brand, including BlackBerry. Really great. You steal my smartphone, you got everything, however. No, you don't, because you don't know my password. You got to have both. John's in Burbank, our next caller. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey,
John. Come on over to the phone.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all right. Hey, you're on hold for an hour. You get to go off. You get to wander off.
I had you on speakerphone.
That's fine.
So, I bought a computer, XPS 8500 from Dell.
Okay.
The desktop, and I didn't do it over the online. I called them and told them what I wanted.
Good.
And so on and so forth. So, the girl told me that what I was getting was a 2 terabyte solid state hard drive.
Wow, that's probably not the case. But go ahead. Okay. Do they make them that big? That's pretty big.
So when I got the computer, it shipped out pretty fast.
Yeah.
I realized it has, instead of a solid-state drive, what it has is a standard hard drive with a 32-gigabyte
right.
solid-state
yeah.
patch that, I guess, speeds things up a little bit.
Yeah, this is an Intel technology. That's almost certainly what she should have said to you. She just didn't know. It's an Intel hybrid technology that a lot of PCs have nowadays. And the idea is, they call it smart response or rapid storage. I can't remember. But the idea...
Yeah, SRT, smart response technology or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The idea being that the stuff that you use a lot can be put on the SSD so it's quickly accessed. But the problem with SSDs is they're very pricey for the per gigabyte price. They're expensive. And there's, so the capacity, that's why when you said 2 terabyte, I knew it wasn't an SSD. They don't, that would cost you more, that would cost you a lot. So that makes perfect sense. It's, but 32 gigs is not going to store a huge amount. It just speeds you up.
Sure.
Let's speed you up a little bit.
So do I have to then go and put...
You don't have to do anything. It's all automatic. You will treat it as a single 2 terabyte drive.
Okay. How misled was I?
She was ignorant. You were misled, but I mean, warning bells, a 2 terabyte SSD, literally, probably $25,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So... I mean, you could call them and say, hey, this was supposed to be a 2 terabyte SSD, but they're not going to put a 2 terabyte SSD in there.
Sure, of course.
They might give you $50 back.
Okay.
She was just, you know, this is unfortunate, but nowadays, because there's no profit in PCs anymore, Dell's struggling, everybody's struggling, they can't afford to have actual trained technicians on the line with you. Oh, dear. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, and Lego. Intern Jeff is now released. After 48 hours in captivity, he has built the entire Lego Death Star. That's good. Very nice, with a workable trash compactor. 24 little Lego guys in there. All right, it's no X-Wing fighter, but it's pretty sweet. Pretty sweet. Look at that. It's a very elaborate model. Thousands of pieces later. It is done. Isn't that great? Heather, did you do Lego when you were...
No.
I think it's probably...
It might be a little boyish.
Boyish. Boy
I played
toy.
With regular blocks. I remember that.
Blocks are cool. Yeah. I played. I was a big Lego fan. Yeah, Jeff has a collection. That's why we bought him this. Be an intern with us, and we'll buy you Legos if you put them together.
But we'll shackle your ankles till the chair.
Yeah, well, we weren't going to let him leave until it was done. I said, can you finish it by Tuesday? And he said, yeah, and he did. He finished it on Sunday. That's good. Very nice. 88, it's not really technology. Well, it's sort of technology. 8888 Ask Leo. Yesterday was... The 36th anniversary of the release of Star Wars, the original Star Wars Episode 4, that Death Star made an appearance in. So it was kind of appropriate. They call it Geek Day as a result, Geek Pride Day yesterday, as a result. The anniversary of... So I think it was appropriate that on Geek Pride Day, the geekiest intern was building a Death Star.
It's perfect. Kismet.
Who's next on the line?
Let's talk to Joe... And can you say this? Chickatawaga.
Chickatawaga. Joe in Chickatawaga. Is that how you say it? Chickatawaga. In New York. It's an Indian word. It means he who lives by the great Lego sculpture.
Hello. No, land of the crab apple, actually.
Is it really? And how do you say it?
Chickatawaga.
Chickatawaga. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. Good afternoon, Joe. What can I do for you?
I have an Nexus 7. Mm-hmm. And with like all people with sealed battery devices, I'm kind of wondering. Okay, it's great now, but when it fails to pull the charge, what the heck am I going to do with this thing?
Yeah, and actually, believe it or not, you can open that up. You just maybe didn't know this. It's not intended to be opened up. I've done it on my Nexus 7. You can pry open the back fairly easily with just your fingernails. Now, the battery isn't intended to be replaced, but if you go to ifixit.com or one of the sites that do this kind of thing, they can show you how you can buy and replace this battery. It's not too hard to open it. Now, but I'm going to answer your question because there are a lot of devices like all of the Apple devices that really aren't openable. The battery's glued in. This one's not, but the battery's glued in. You can't pry open the back of an iPad or an iPod or an iPhone. Most lithium-ion batteries have what we call a duty cycle. There's a certain number of times they can be fully charged and discharged. And on the Nexus 7 and most iPhone and other devices, it's 500 times. So that's a very legitimate question, because that's probably a couple of years, maybe 3 years at most. And by a partial charge is not a full charge. So you add them up till you get a full charge, and that's one full charge. So if you do three partial charges, that's one full charge. So you get 500 of those.
That's the other thing I was wondering, is it, if I see my battery is at 70% and I'm going to do something the next day, like all day, it doesn't hurt it that much?
No. In fact, let me tell you the rules on lithium ion, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, partly because of older battery technologies like NiCad and nickel metal hydride. Lithium ion, to preserve the battery as long as possible, keep it plugged in at all times. Assuming you have a well-designed circuit, which all well-done devices from big-name manufacturers are fine. They will automatically keep it from overcharging. Lithium-ion batteries will explode if overcharged, but they have circuitry in there to prevent that. So it's best to keep it plugged in whenever you're using it. If you want to store it, let it drain to half capacity and then store it, not drain it fully. It doesn't matter, however, if you use it till the end. It doesn't condition. There's no conditioning necessary. That's a very common misconception. Even manufacturers will tell you, let it drain and charge fully, blah, blah, blah. No, you don't have to do any of that stuff.
Well, one little caveat with that, if you do the nerdy thing and completely read your warranty, if you do leave it plugged in all the time, it voids your warranty, believe it or not.
Well, that's too bad, because that's wrong. And it's too bad that they put... Does it really say that in the warranty? That's interesting, huh?
Oh, yeah, in really fine print, as you can imagine.
Yeah. I researched into this, and it is absolutely the case that the best thing to do with a laptop, a notepad, is just keep it plugged in whenever you don't need to unplug it. It's fine to unplug it. But keeping it plugged in all the time is the best way to keep that battery in working order. But after 500 full charges, yes, that's it. It's over.
Would there be anything like putting a sort of external case on it that would have like a battery in it? You'd plug into the micro USB?
Sure, sure. In fact, you can buy those today. There are lots of companies that make, I use them myself, carry them around, little lithium-ion batteries that have a USB plug, and you just plug it into the USB plug, and it charges it or keeps it alive. I don't know if the batteries, it gets weird when the battery is dead. For instance, on laptops, if the battery dies on many laptops, the laptop won't work even when it is plugged in. You actually have to pull the battery out and then plug it in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well...
But I wouldn't worry about this. Again, iFixit, and we'll put a link in the show notes to this page. And there are places you can buy Nexus 7 batteries. It's not going to be a problem for a year or two. It is totally doable, and it doesn't require ungluing or a heat gun or anything like that. You could just pry it out with a simple plastic device or your fingernails, and it's got a little connector, a little power tail, and people sell these, especially as the Nexus 7 ages and there are more and more Nexus 7s. On eBay and stuff, it should be easy to find a replacement. I wouldn't worry about that at all. I do think it's really shameful that companies like Apple, particularly, make devices where the batteries can't be removed. But at least, with Apple, when you buy a device from Apple, they pay a recycling fee and they will take it back and they say recycle it. And I think for some devices, that's not a big deal because the battery is just in there loose. They just have to pry it open and take it out. And then they can recycle it. But more and more, we're seeing Apple devices, the new iPads, for instance, the new iPhone 5, where the battery is glued in. It's really glued in. And, unless you recycle it with Apple, I think that it's very highly unlikely the recyclers are going to treat it properly. It's just too much work for them to get a heat gun out and loosen the glue and pry the thing apart. These things are not recyclable. And I think it's fairly unconscionable that companies are making these disposable devices and then gluing stuff together and just making it so difficult to recycle. It really is kind of a shame. Do recycle properly. If you buy an Apple device, make sure you send it back to them. Make them recycle it, because presumably they have a way to do that that doesn't involve sending it to China. It really is too bad. It begs the word evil. I agree. Somebody in that chat room said evil, and I agree. It begs the word evil. Brian in Manchester, Connecticut. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Leo. Longtime listener. Big fan. I got all your books. I have a TiVo question for you today.
All right. I wrote that one of my first books was a book on hacking the TiVo.
Yep. HD TiVo Series 3. Every now and then, the broadcaster doesn't broadcast what they're supposed to.
Yeah.
So it gets the wrong label.
Yeah.
I got the TiVo desktop software, and I can stream it over to there. I even bought the $25 upgrade, and I can relabel the program, but when I stream it back, TiVo knows what it was.
Oh, so annoying.
Is there a way to change that?
I don't know. That's a great question. You notice my book was about the very first generation TiVo. They really locked it down over time, and I have no idea. Maybe somebody in the chat room could help us. Relabeling shows that you've used TiVo to go on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
A lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country. Gonna eat a lot of peaches.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Nathan is our new musical director and is doing a great job. Thank you, Nathan. I always want to say Stratham. Straighten. Staten. Staten. No R. Staten. I always think of Jason Statham. Anyway, enough of that. Let's take another call. Oh, by the way, we were talking with Brian about changing the metadata in his TiVo. So he pulls stuff off his TiVo 3 to his computer. Got the TiVo desktop to do that. I guess do they call it TiVo to go still? Same idea. But then when he puts it back on the TiVo to play it, the incorrect metadata shows up. So what you need is a desktop TiVo desktop metadata editor that will allow you on your computer to go into the file, because it's just stored as text in the file in addition to the video. The problem and the reason this is all difficult is because they're so paranoid about piracy that they probably don't want you to modify the file in any way, even just to change the metadata. So I don't know, but maybe somebody in the chat room will. And the way to do that is to go to Tech Guy Lab. Either call us, but the show's almost over. So go to techguylabs.com, the website. And we have every show. This is completely free. Excuse me. No subscription necessary or anything. Every show is there. The show notes themselves, the original show notes, but then audio and video are added after the fact. And we put in comments, and if you have something to add, you can just put it in the comments. So if you've got a way to do this, find that question. Should be easy to do in the show, and then add it in the comments, and that'd be great. And Brian, keep your eye peeled to techguylabs.com. Our next call is Rick in Orange.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Rick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm in the gorilla suit. Remember me?
Oh, the man in the... So I should explain. I don't know if Heather knows about this. Rick is one of those guys that you see outside of car dealerships and all that stuff. He's wearing a gorilla suit and he's dancing with a sign like that. But he's got a phone in there, and every once in a while he takes a break and he makes a call and he calls us. I don't know why. But I guess he's a geek in a gorilla suit.
Yes, sir. I'm a geek in a gorilla suit and I'm in a furniture store.
Not car dealer, furniture store. What's the name of the furniture store?
Design Center.
And the Design Center on where?
606 West Catella.
Everybody should go there and harass the gorilla.
A big tent there. Everything's happening here.
Yeah, I bet it is. It's a big party. You're not standing on the side of the road in the gorilla suit talking into a cell phone, are you?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm on everything.
That's a sight. I want somebody to take a picture of that and post that on Flickr. What can I do for you, Rick?
I need some bananas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes. If you're an Arrested Development fan, you could just go to the Bluth banana stand and get some bananas. Double chocolate dip with nuts.
That'd be great. That's what I need.
Has anybody watched they're back. Last night. Netflix has purchased the rights and has been producing Arrested Development episodes. And they put it back on last night. And I think you can watch them all at once. That's the way we watch TV nowadays.
Good. I'm gonna watch it tonight.
Good. You know, I was not a big fan, and so I last night I watched about 4 episodes from season 1. I have to catch up. I got 3 whole seasons before I can even watch these new ones.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either, so it's going to be exciting. It's
new. Yeah. Well, it's got some massive fans out there. Yeah.
Awesome. Great.
So what can I do for you besides get you some bananas?
Well, what I was worried about is XP, Windows is going to quit supporting XP. So, if I have to erase my hard drive and I have XP OEM with
you can still install it. No, that's not that. All it means is you'll still be able to install it, Rick. I'm not sure I'd want to, but you could. Actually, XP was pretty good. But, as of next summer, Microsoft, all versions of Windows have a, I don't know what you call it, statutory end of life, a point beyond which Microsoft will no longer fix it. Doesn't mean you can't use it. You can install it. You just won't get patches for it. And there's a potential security issue there because if they're not fixing security holes and a big one is found, you might be kind of in a risky situation. On the other hand, it's been 10 years and XP's really been pretty much banged on, so I think that's unlikely. I think it's probably going to be fine. So you should be able to keep using it if you have to reinstall it. As far as I know, I don't think there's any issue. I don't know. Maybe they'll kill the Windows Genuine Advantage authentication server. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that'll continue to operate. But it might be worth, you don't have to do it yet, but it might be worth, if that should come up 6 months, a year, 2 years from now, it might be worth upgrading. You don't have to go to Windows 8. Get Windows 7. And good luck in the gorilla suit. 8888, ask Leo. Pam is in Studio City, California. Our next caller. Hi, Pam. Leo LaForte, the tech guy.
Hi. I talked to you last week about the iPod and the iPhone.
Hmm.
About trying to text.
Yeah. Did you solve it?
No.
Oh, nuts.
Apparently, no, it does not work. What does work is the Skyping, but we talked about if I don't want to talk to the person, I don't want to see the person.
Well, Skype has texting built in as well, so if they have Skype, you can still message them.
Oh, okay.
What did I tell you last week to use Apple's Messages program?
Yeah, and you also said something about SMS.
Yeah, so SMS does require cell phone service. That's the text message system that your cell carrier provides. However, Messages will use that if it's available, or it will use the internet. In fact, it prefers to use the internet and just send a text message that way. There are a lot of programs that do that. WhatsApp is a good one that's very widely used. So you could use Google Voice. That'd be another way to do it. So there's lots of ways to send text messages that don't use SMS. You can't use SMS on that iPod because there's no cell phone service.
But could I use a home phone?
No, you need to have a cell phone to use SMS.
Right, yeah, but I have a good provider already, and I don't make a lot of calls and
But you don't need to send SMS. So the person on the other end is using an iPhone?
Yeah.
Okay, so then you can. Do you have a computer?
Yeah.
Okay, what kind of computer? Your Windows computer? or a Mac?
To Windows.
Okay. If you had a Mac, you could use Apple's Messages, and that would work just fine. I send text, what looks like text messages, to people on iPhones all the time from my Mac, but that Messages is, of course, just on Apple devices. But you can easily send text messages to people using Google Voice, for instance. That's on your computer. You can run Google Voice. You can use Skype to do this as well. So you can have Skype on your computer.
I don't want to see
No, you don't have to. Just use text. Just because Skype has the video and audio, you don't have to use that. Just send Skype text. Skype has text messaging. Text Plus. There's a lot of solutions that you could use either on the iPod or the desktop or both.
Okay.
I would install, Google's now moved to this Hangouts solution. You can install that too. All of these use internet. They don't use a cell carrier service, so you don't need a cell carrier service. And you can talk to anybody's iPhone. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Happy Memorial Day. I don't like saying Happy Memorial Day. What do you say? I don't know. You say Memorial Day to you.
Please have a good memory.
Let's remember our men and women who have served in the armed forces over the last 2.5 centuries, I guess. That's what you say. Who should I talk to next, Heather?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to give you the choice so that it's all on your head. May it be Sam. On your head, Heather
That's
Heyman.
Right. No, we Hammond. Have to do Sam and Costa Mesa.
Sam and Costa Mesa. Hey, Sam, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather. Hey, Sam.
Oh, hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Quick question for you. Basically, I work in construction. I've got a nice little $20 clamshell LG straight talk phone from Walmart that I don't want to lose.
Okay.
In other words, I'm not tuning an iPhone or something. But what I would like to be able to do is, if I need to access the internet, say I'm on a job site or something, is there something inexpensive that I can do to do that? I don't want to lug around a laptop.
So you need the device and the connectivity, basically.
Correct.
Yeah, you know what might be a really... And what when you say access the internet, what is it that you want to do? Just surf the web and do email?
No, not so much email. More like, say I'm bidding something on eBay. Say I need to get a business location to go get some supplies.
Got it. Yeah. I think the simplest and best way to do this is a Chromebook. You could use a tablet as well, but Chromebooks are like real laptops. Google makes them. It's their OS. It's basically a Chrome browser in a notebook.
Oh, okay.
And they're $200, $250. You can get them at play.google.com, which is the Google store. And Samsung and Acer currently make them, although other companies are going to make them. But get the one that has built-in 3G. So the Acer C7 Chromebook, for instance, the Samsung Chromebook. Don't get the Pixel. That's too expensive. Get the. Let's see. Yeah, that's $1,500. But so what these are is they're little laptops. I'm sitting across. The reason I think about this is I'm sitting across from somebody who's using one in here. So it has LTE built into it. I think it's Verizon LTE, maybe AT&T. So you're going to pay a monthly fee for your internet access. And then it's very simple. It's a lightweight. It's basically like a netbook. But it's very inexpensive. And these work quite well. You could also get a tablet, but I think it's nice to have a real keyboard.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely want a keyboard.
Yeah. And these have, because they have built-in LTE connectivity, you don't have to worry about whether you can get on Wi-Fi or not. And for bidding on eBay, it's all you need.
Cool. All right. Appreciate
it. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's say hi to Herb in Rancho Santa Fe. Hello, Herb.
Leo, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I've got an iMac E5 that's getting old and getting ready to crash.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's getting tough to get somebody to support it anymore, too.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the new iMac, and I'm wondering if I should buy the Fusion hard drive on it.
So this is, we were talking earlier about Intel and their rapid storage system.
Right.
This is like that. The Fusion drive on the Macintosh, though, is, I think, a little bit better. But what they've done is, in fact, I have one. I'm sitting right in front of an iMac with a Fusion drive. It gives you 1 or 3 terabytes, depending on which one you buy. And it's a combination of a spinning drive and a 128 gigabyte solid state drive.
I see.
The reason you would do that is because solid state is considerably faster, like 20 times faster than a spinning drive. So... I, for instance, now just won't buy a computer without a solid-state drive. It makes it boot times are seconds, application load times seconds. It's great for the operating system and for applications. On the other hand, you don't get all that speed with a Fusion drive because on the Fusion drive, Apple makes – the operating system makes a decision about what to put on the spinning drive and whatnot.
Right.
Bottom line, if speed is important to you – I do like the idea of an SSD drive. I don't think a Fusion drive gives you the best of both worlds. It's kind of half of both worlds. You get a large drive for a somewhat not so large price. I don't recommend the Fusion drive. There's some limitations of it. There's potential problems with it. If you can get, and I can't remember if Apple does this, an Apple with an SSD boot drive and then a separate data drive, that's a better way to go. Because really, we know what you should put on the solid state drive. You should put the operating system and applications. And then all your data should be on the spinning drive.
Right.
And that's all you really need to do. And so Fusion is, I think, an overly complicated solution.
Okay, great.
I don't know. I should look and see. But I do love these new iMacs. I have one, and I'm very, very happy with it. It does a great job. It's a beautiful screen. Yeah, the Fusion is kind of gimmicky.
Okay, and one other quick question. When you are monitoring your activity monitor,
yeah,
and you're in the network tab, the data that it gives you, is that in kilobytes rather than bits?
You know, I'm gonna have to look and see. I don't know.
The reason
if it's it, it, they'll you can tell because if it's bytes, it'll be a capital B. If it's right. bits, it'll okay. be a lowercase b.
Okay. Yeah. Then it's bytes, which I guess is different from when you buy a network.
That's right. So when you go to DSL Extreme and they say you're going to get 5 megabits down, it'll be M lowercase BPS. That's very different from megabytes down.
About 8 times different.
Yeah. Well, actually. Because of start and stop bits, it's more like 1/10 as fast.
Well, okay. I wish I'd have known that yesterday to save me about 4 hours on the telephone.
That's why you call us. You only have to spend an hour on hold.
There you go.
Yeah. Capital B is capital B is usually bytes. Lowercase b is bits.
Right. Okay.
And they're about 1/10 the size.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. They do that all the time in marketing. You know, the same thing happens when you get hard drive sizes. You know, that 3 terabyte Fusion drive is really not 3 terabytes because it's 3 terabytes in decimal, 3,000 gigabytes in decimal, but it's actually somewhat fewer in binary. And that's, in fact, how the computer works is in binary, not decimal. So this happens all the time. In fact, you'll see fine print now because state's attorneys general have come down on these companies, said you can't quote drive size in decimal terabytes, and then when they look, it's binary megabyte. It's a different number. There's 1,024 bytes in a megabyte, not 1,000. And I just now you understand why they do it. It's just confusing. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones here. Mike in Denver, Colorado. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. How you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you. Hey, quick question. Looking to get my whole house kind of wired up for sound via my like stereo or smart TV. And every room in my house already has Cat 5, Cat 6.
Oh, great.
I don't know if it's better to go with Cat 5, Cat 6, or if you think wireless is the way to go?
Well, I went is wireless, but it's pricey. Okay. If you use, you're going to have to kind of do it yourself if you use hardwired internet. You know, something like, there are a couple of ways to do this. I use Sonos, S-O-N-O-S, and this is all wireless. Works fabulously. It's just expensive. It's going to be $400 a room, something like that.
Okay.
But I just find it works perfectly, so it's okay with me. The sound's phenomenal. What you're doing with Sonos is you're buying just a speaker that has its own wireless network built in.
Gotcha.
If you do it wired, then you're going to have a base unit that will take the wired and turn it into audio. And you're going to have some. It just gets complicated. In fact, I don't even know what wired solutions are out there. Wired is, of course, going to be more reliable, although, again, Sonos, it uses its own proprietary networking, which seems to work quite well.
Okay.
So if you got the money, price the Sonos out. I think that's a great way to go. And I'm gonna look at wired solutions, and we'll come back and talk about those in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, last segment of the weekend. Oh, my. Let's see if we can get a couple of calls in here before I have to go. Mohammed's on the line from Anaheim, California. Hi, Mohammed.
Yeah, hey, good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon.
I bought a long-time listener for you. You have bought so many things on your recommendation.
This can be an expensive habit, I understand.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, I bought a Windows 8 laptop. And I was just going to return it because I didn't like the Windows 8 startup and all those things.
Yeah, you're not alone. You're not alone. Yeah. It's really...
I heard your segment and then I bought that $5 app.
Ah!
Yeah.
Start 8. It's from stardock.com. It's $5 and it gives you a start menu.
Exactly. It works very well. So I was just wondering, you know, I bought a software for that web development that works on Windows 7. So how can I do it on Windows 8?
What do you want to do on Windows 8 again?
I want to use that software on the laptop that I bought, which works on Windows 8. It's a dumb question, though.
No, I don't understand. So you mean the Stardock software? You want to use it on another computer?
No. I have a Windows 7 software that I bought.
Oh, yeah, but do you have the install disks?
I do.
And are you saying you want the programs that are on your Windows 7 computer or the Windows 7 operating system itself?
No. The Windows 7 software that I bought, I had previously bought it, actually. And the laptop that I bought, which is new, the operating system is Windows 8.
Yeah, I understand. But what I'm asking is, do you want the application software on your Windows 7 computer or Windows 7 itself on Windows 8? Just the applications.
On Windows 8. The application on Windows 8.
Yeah. So if you have the install software, just run it and it'll install.
But it said it's compatible on Windows 7 only.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to have any trouble. That's because when it came out, that's all that was there. You should be able to transfer the apps over. I don't know many Windows 7 apps that won't run on Windows 8. They should all work just fine. When they say requires Windows 7, usually what they mean is in lieu of an older version, in lieu of Windows Vista or Windows XP, not in lieu of the newer version. So you should be able to move it over. Now, if you're talking about something that came with Windows 7, like Minesweeper, and there's no Minesweeper on Windows 8, well, then you're pretty much out of luck.
No, it's a new software.
Yeah. But if it's, let's say it's Microsoft Office for argument's sake. If you have the install disks, you just install it on the new computer. You may need to, depending on license agreement. If it's Photoshop, for instance, you have to deactivate the version on the Windows 7 computer and then activate it on Windows 8 because they don't allow you to install it on multiple computers. It just depends on every program what their various copy protection and license protection agreements are. But in general, you shouldn't worry about the Windows version. That's not going to cause a problem. Almost everything will install on Windows 8 just fine.
Got it.
Yeah, Windows 8 is pretty much Windows 7 with some improvements and then some confusing interface stuff.
And another little question. I bought that Clear Wireless thing.
Yeah.
So can they improve the signals on that?
Yeah, in fact, Clearwire is being sold. It was a flop. It didn't work. So you're stuck. Clearwire is terrible. And I don't.
I can still return it because I have 15 days trial period.
Give it back. Clearwire is dead. It's a technology called WiMAX, and for some reason Sprint decided to use that instead of real LTE 4G, and it just didn't work at all. Sprint's trying to buy them. The folks at Dish are trying to buy them, but really they're not trying to buy the service, I think. They're trying to buy the frequencies, the spectrum. That's what's really valuable, not the technology. So I think the future for Clearwire as a service is not great. All right, now let's say hi to Ken in Orange. Hi, Ken. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm really pleased that you're having my call heard. Nice to be had. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you, I am.
A couple of very positive things I wanted to say. First of all, I didn't particularly need help on Carbonate, but I just wanted to tell you what a pleasant experience I've had with them.
Unsolicited, folks. This was not planned. Have I ever met you before, Ken?
No.
All right.
I've listened to you plenty of times.
Good.
I have a desktop here in the office, and I have a laptop, and I take the laptop with me when I travel. Now, I go down to Costa Rica four times a year.
Oh, you lucky dog.
I go there for a week to a week and a half.
Do you do business down there, or you just like it down there?
Well, this business, although I tried to tell one of my other customers about that, they said there was no such thing as a business in Costa Rica. But
it sounds pleasant, there, I must say.
I get busy on my laptop, and when I change a file or I create a file on my laptop, I'm aware that because I'm linked with the computer at home through SkyDrive, that minutes after I created on my laptop, it's on my desktop at the office
in
my home in Orange, California.
Right.
And minutes after that, it's on Carbonite.
Good.
And that's...
That's double backup. You've got one at home, and then you've got one in the sky.
Yes.
And I think that's important because you need to have multiple copies. One copy is not a backup.
Right. So, matter of fact, there was was one time when my laptop died down there, and I was able to borrow one from the lady that runs a small B&B where I stay.
Wow.
Got into go to my PC, And the things that I had generated on the one that just died were sitting there on my desktop, and I was back in business.
What a relief. Yeah, you have a particular issue you need to solve because you travel so much. You really need to have that capability. It sounds like you've done it right.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to say, two of these positive comments, and then one quick question for you. The other very positive experience is RingCentral.
Oh, good.
Because when I get ready to go down there, a few days ahead, I'll call in, and these people are very, very patient and very, very helpful, because what I need to do, and I don't remember it from having done it three months previous, is how to set up a message on my phone here, on the RingCentral phone, that will start, say, at midnight on a particular day, and then go for another 10 days, and then automatically go back to my regular message. And they allow me to do that. But one of the nicest things that I've seen about them is that soft phone feature.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
I'm sitting down there on the patio outside my little room, and up pops a message in my RingCentral box that says, you have a fax message. I can read it. I can view it.
When stuff like that happens, and it's not just RingCentral, it's just the digital world we live in. When stuff like that happens, you just go, man, we live in amazing times. Here I am in Costa Rica, and I'm getting a fax from around the world. You know, that's amazing.
And if I wanted to listen to a phone message, I listen to it on my laptop sitting in my
bedroom. I love that.
In Costa Rica. Now, I do have, because I haven't quite figured out how to get around this yet, since I got
real quick, we're almost out of time here.
Okay, I've still got a fax line, and I use it because people say, well, here's a form you got to fill out and sign, and you got to fax it to me.
Right.
And so I'd love to be able to just scan it in and send it out to
Can't wait till those days are gone. If you have a smartphone with a camera, that'll work fine.
Well, let's talk about, say, a multi-page document that I got to be able to copy and then send to someone. I've got a Brother MFC 8640D multifunction, but it doesn't scan very well. And I've gone online. The instructions don't show me how to scan. The scanning portion isn't working. I was wondering if you know of a good scanner, printer.
Yeah, my favorite, and they're an advertiser, too. And since you seem to like our advertisers, I'll give you their name as well. The Epson Workforce is an all-in-one that I use to fax, scan, print, copy all the time. And I just love it. It's not a laser. It's an inkjet. I just think they're really, really good. And the scan capability, network scan, is great. I can scan a document across the office and get it on my laptop. Love it. Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great Geek Week. Happy Memorial Day. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.